David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 329. I'm your host, Steve Raker, here as almost always with my cohorts, WWX, Kevin up in Canada, and Andrew,
Hello.
The LA Rabbit out west.
Out west, where it's the best.
This is the one before Andrew and I go on our big vacations, even though... they are going to be in different places. We're going to end up rendezvousing in Disneyland for a day on your birthday of all days. So that's the magic of comics for you right there, Andrew.
Are you going to record something live?
The screams of us while we're on the choo-choo train tour around the park.
Sounds good.
When it goes through the tunnel, that's when you got to scream.
I don't know. The last time we... did a joint recording, wasn't that our searching for Steve Ditko, and look what happened to him.
we never made it up to that the right floor, did we? Well, so this is the episode where we want to go on vacation with a nice clean slate. We want to get all our recent reads off of our chest. You could say, Kevin, that we are talking about Marvel.
Ooh, I like that. That's when they went to allow me on the regular show.
Oh my gosh, that was one of the weirdest things in the history of the show. Is we, at one point, the iTunes numbers were actually fairly representative, or at least the best we could get to numbers as far as people who were listening and downloading podcasts, because people were using that primarily before lots of better alternatives rose up around it and scatter the numbers. So now there's like almost no such thing as good numbers on podcast downloads.
Whoa, but it's like the direct market.
One episode, our faithful host emeritus, David Price, was absent for a week, and I was providing the material for the show, and I sent it into the grand poobah of the Deliberate Noise Network, Derek Coward, to publish as the show. And we just said that our segment was talking about Marvel, and he just put the segment out, and a podcast came out talking about Marvel. One episode, and it had, like, even 6 months to a year later, Kevin, we were getting dozens of downloads on it a month. It was pretty funny. It had ended up with, more than the usual Marvel Noise download. It was really funny.
Well, that's a good starting point. Like, you're looking through, oh, you mean I have to listen to 150 episodes? What if I just want a jumping on point?
No, you got to keep with the legacy numbering.
This is all very inside.
Every new number one is someone's jumping on point.
Also a jumping off point. That's what they don't tell you. But I'm going to try to keep positive here, so...
Marvel Noise barely keeps afloat on Twitter and on Facebook, but those are places you can go to get announcements for new episodes. You can find new and old episodes on marvelnoise.com and elsewhere. We are a podcast proudly sponsored by nobody, but if we were sponsored by somebody, it would be Jim Whiting of Whiting Studios, Whiting, who has the Margot Intergalactic Trash Collector comic and the Dark Arts oversized soft cover, like artist edition sized artist portfolio of six different artists' work, and the Basil Gogos estate book of his sketches and concept pieces and stuff that are just about to hit the stand. So check out WhitingStudios.com for more on that front. All right. Books. I know you guys have been reading books.
My freshest recent read that I read today, so doesn't get any fresher than that, is Millie the Model Annual number 3.
Wow.
This was one of my pickups from the recent WonderCon. which I discussed on our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise. Check it out. Out of coming to a fine podcast hosting site near you. This is a classic. Millie explains that every girl really has four lives. First her childhood, then adulthood, then marriage, and finally she reaches motherhood. So Millie's letting you know that, you know, I guess if you don't reach one of those stages, there's some problem with you.
Isn't so. That like a playground taunt that ends like, and here comes Millie in the baby carriage?
So I guess those of you that are unmarried or not have kids, you know, you just haven't reached the lives of Millie. And this is a Stan Lee, Stan Goldberg production. What's fun about the Millie, this version I have is really beat up, like probably a not great or 0.5. Like the back cover's missing, and I think some of the pages are like half cut out because I think they might have been paper dolls in this one. But what I love is that when she has a hairdo and clothes, and they give credit, so all the notes aren't for like C. Millie issue 12. It's, you know, at home attire by Sima Schiff, Forest Hills, New York. So it's almost like a modern day Instagram account or whatever, where all her stuff is sponsored. So it's, you know, the different phases of Millie. And they have one pinup that just has her different hairstyles, Millie's marvelous hairdos, and it goes through all the different. But you can send your version of Marvelous Minnie's hairdos to Millie Annual Third Floor, 655 Madison Ave, New York, New York. I don't know that that's going to... I don't know if they have mail forwarding on from the time of Millie. But yeah, it's got pinups. It's got all these tales of her and 16, her reaching adulthood as a model, getting married, and Millie the mom. So, Millie the Model, Annual Number 3. Big hit. Not sure when the next issue's coming out, though, boys. I have to be honest with you.
It could be this year. Aren't they doing a lot of anniversary celebrations?
I was just going to say, there's never been a time more unpredictable or something like that if those crazy old books can be coming out again.
I would be all down if they did it in that style where they're going to credit, like, the hairdos and the fashion and really embrace.
It's going to be hyper-realistic.
Not just the, you know, we're taking the title and doing whatever we want with it type of thing.
What, you don't want a manga Millie the Model?
No, I don't want a Ziggy Pig and Silly Seal redo.
They already did do an update somewhat of Millie the Model by bringing Patsy Walker into the Marvel Universe and then destroying her soul and making her the sister of Damon Hellstrom and the daughter of Satan and all the crazy stuff. Yikes. Poor Patsy Walker.
Cheese and crack. Well, she had that reboot series from, what, 4 or 5 years ago, I want to say.
Catherine Immonen one?
Oh, yeah. No, the other one. Where she like, teamed up with Jessica Jones and all that craziness.
So she's... that was the... Kate Leth book and Williams and all that. That was, maybe I'm wrong on how many years ago that was, but I do remember.
No, because I think it came out around the same time the Jessica Jones TV series came out.
Yes, I think you're right, because they had, it was funny to see that they put that character in the TV show, and then she had her full superhero comic as a superhero.
I like that there was a time in comics where they would do mail-in scenarios along those lines where you could send in your Katie Keene's outfit designs or, you know, Millie's dress and hairdo.
Yeah, and hairdo, and you get credits and everything.
Or Across Town, it was really... Dial H for Hero with that, where you could send in the hero thing. And, you know, the Legion even had a thing where you sent in to vote who was going to be the next chairman, I think.
Like, well, I don't know if you remember, there was an obscure title, Thunderbolts.
I was going to do the same joke.
But then I guess you run into the rights problems.
Sure.
And then your character dies.
Which is a shame, because now with email, it would be easier than ever before to run something like that in a quicker time, right? And it's so easy for people to, whatever, text pound 49 or whatever and tell you if they want Robin to live or die.
I wonder if that's the problem, though. There's just too many, too much at this point.
Yeah. Sure. They'll give you exposure.
You know, they'd be flooded with thousands of people's ideas.
I liked the days of the kooky new villains, though. So certainly today with all the different options between Kickstarter stuff and different indie publishers and the old Kirkman manifesto of saving your best material for the indie and all that stuff, you don't get to see those villains anymore. But like, you like Arcade?
Like Arcade's, I feel like Arcade like had a resurgence because everyone's like Arcade is lame.
But those
and now like Arcade is, I don't know if I would say he's cool, but it seems like he's back on the radar.
Those first few Arcade appearances when he was just another kooky Claremont villain of the week for, I think it was first in Marvel Team Up 65, I want to say, with Spider-Man and Captain Britain. And that was his first appearance with the whole Murder World stuff. And then over in X-Men when he was in 123 and 124 of Uncanny back in the Claremont Burn X-Men time, it was Spider-Man was the connection between he was the one who recognized the garbage truck and when Storm got taken and all that. So it was Spider-Man and the X-Men, if you remember, in Murder World. Or Spidey was tied up along with the girls.
And then, I know Weapon H is pretty kooky.
And my favorite of those early appearances, I think, was the later Murder World one right before issue 150, 146 or 7, along those lines, when like the regular X-Men were scattered about and it was the reserve X-Men. It was like Havoc and Banshee without his scream, and he was more like a secret agent and those guys trying to deal with the Murder World stuff, a Dave Cockrum book. I like Arcade stuff. And Arcade is back and is the main villain behind the current arc of Amazing Spider-Man, Kevin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who would have thought that people like buying robots or doing crazy games or reality TV?
I always liked Arcade. I never got why people thought he was a bad villain or anything. I really enjoyed, like you say, having the robot versions, because it always means you can have weird teaser fights, and then the spoiler is, it was just a robot in the end. I don't have any problem with that.
And it's such a video game.
I think we went through a phase of like being all serious, so I feel like that's past. Like you can sort of, like they're sort of both.
It's so video game-ish to have.
Yeah,
Murder World, you got to get from point A to point B, and you got to go through, you know, it's a side-scrolling, you know, barrier-type game of all the different rooms with the different traps. And in today's age of video games being more part of the culture where even the grown-ups grew up playing them, and all of those snazzy escape room and mystery room places that are kind of hot right now for people to go to and do those type of escape situations, puzzle rooms, you'd think that Murder World would be right up people's alley.
Oh, I still play video games. I just finished the Spider-Man game, the new one from Sony, not that long ago at all, maybe a few weeks ago.
Even this story, though, doesn't involve a Murder World, really, because Arc title is Hunted. And it's Arcade and Kraven the Hunter teaming up in a business venture, Kevin. Written by Nick Spencer, art primarily by Ryan Ottley. It's 10 parts, March, April, and May of 2019 here. Issue 16 to 22 of Amazing Spider-Man, with a couple of fill-in issues that are like character focus issues that are point U issues.
Issue. Hunted.
The deal is, for a price, you too can don a virtual reality visor and control a Kraven the Hunter-like robot. And then these robots then go and hunt Spider-Man's, like, animal motif rogues gallery. Like, you know, the rhino, white rabbit, scorpion, tarantula, gibbon, vulture, and on and on and on. You know, you get it. And to add another layer, Arcade and Craven have hired the Taskmaster and the Black Ant, who is formerly Robert Kirkman's irredeemable Ant-Man, to capture all of those animal-based characters. So you got the two of them running around gathering up all of the prey for the hunt. At first I was like, why Black Ant? What's so great about him? And then I realized, oh, he's just there so he could then be, you know, betrayed at the end by Taskmaster and thrown in as the last animal added to the mix. But so they're all thrown into Central Park, and then one of those handy-dandy impenetrable barriers is erected, and some hostages are taken, Black Cat and Kurt Connors' kid, and Spidey gets thrown in there with all his foes, and then the hunt begins. It's utter chaos. I mean, Spidey and these characters are all on the run from these armored, weaponized Kraven bots that are, like, running around just picking everybody off. It's insane.
That's a good pitch.
Are you enjoying it, Kevin?
I am. Maybe that didn't sound enthusiastic. No, like, that's not a joke. It is a good pitch.
That is a good pitch. Yeah,
I know. I'm not, I don't see anything, and it kind of plays off all the other Kraven stuff. Because remember, he was kind of zombie-ish, and now he's still sort of. Like, I was wondering if they would nail some of the zombies aspects of him coming back. But yeah, they do.
They did spend some time going through Kraven's. You know, that was one of the things I used to like about the old Marvel comics of the 60s, guys. And even into the 70s, was there was sort of a thing that you needed to explain how the villain that's appearing in your issue, your villain of the month, how he got out of jail.
Yeah.
Or how he got from whatever predicament that he got left when over in Fantastic Four, he got buried beneath a glacier. So there was always an explanation, like, how did the villain get here? And this goes back, pays homage to that. You get Kraven was dead, right? He died. That was the whole thing. Kraven's last hunt. He gets reanimated by his family. They move to the Savage Land.
Yep.
He kills all them. Then he hunts down the Animen that belong to the High Evolutionary, or his creations, I should say. We belong to no one. And that gets the High Evolutionary's attention. And he requires the Evolutionary to make him 87 clone sons that he raises to an accelerated adulthood, all trained to be hunters. Then he calls them home for a big feast, and only one shows up with a bag of skulls. That's all the other brothers' skulls. He's killed all his other clone siblings. And first Kraven's, he's like weeping, and then he's like, oh man, you're my true heir, you know? And unfortunately, Kraven's hunting grounds are drying up. The animals on are being poached, and the ones that are left are diseased. And this is no legacy, no empire to leave his son. And that sets the motivation for him to go on this business venture with Arcade, which I still don't get really what's in it for Kraven. Are we just talking money here? Or just respect for the hunt thing or whatever? You know, I don't get that. And I don't get why Kraven didn't hunt all of the, you know, I guess he did get a bunch of them because he shows his son that, you know, I've already gathered all these. But, like, why would Kraven hire out to the Taskmaster and Black Ant? That seemed a little weird. But I'm not pulling too hard on the strings because it's more of a crazy melee where you get to see all the other crazy. I mean, there's a one of those point U issues focuses on the Gibbon, and it's drawn by Ken Lashley. It's fantastic, and it's like you care about the Gibbon.
I already cared about the Gibbon. That's a fun fact. One of my first Spider-Man back issues, like, when someone was giving away comics type of thing was like the first appearance of the Gibbon. So, you know, that kind of sticks with you.
Well, I think speaking of the game and Arcade, a connection of them, well, Arcade isn't in it. Screwball, the Dan Slott, Marcos Martin created supervillain, was in the video game. Not a main character, but like a side mission. And, you know, that's she has nice links to Arcade, who gave her, you know, help and training and everything. And I always think, yeah, that's like the modern version of Arcade is Screwball.
Oh, and I wanted to ask Kevin, there's been a subplot brewing, because I know you've been reading Amazing and have been enjoying it for the most part, right? I'm not...
Indeed. Yeah, it's good.
So what's with this subplot brewing where, like, Peter and MJ are being stalked by the Batman who laughs?
Money?
Isn't his character a little derivative? So, like, what are they doing?
I thought it was not Swarm. Who else was I thinking about?
Yeah, right? The carry-on guy, right?
Yeah, it's some kind of guy like that. That's been... I assume, like, the Kraven subplot that was brewing for, like, 15 issues, this is like, the thing that's going to come up after, I guess. It's some kind of... I don't know. I don't know what to think of it. Like, there's not a whole lot there. And it's been that way. It's like Claremonti and it's just giving a little bit of info, and then we'll come back to that in 20 issues. So I don't really know what to think of it.
It's, and just to your in on the comparison joke, it's a bandaged, hooded figure that the bandages are open around the mouth, and there's a big disfigured, like, Joker mouth.
Whoa, it's Hush.
It's like what? Anyway.
Maybe it's Ben Reilly. Oh, wait, he came back. Never mind.
They already wrecked him.
I don't know if you guys intentionally did this, but I have a comic here called Spider-Man City at War that opens up the Gamerverse, which is based on that Sony Spider-Man video game.
I played the game. I figured I didn't need the comic. Did I miss out? Should I have gotten the comic?
See, I've never played the game and probably won't. But I won't say that I'll never play it, because all those Final Fantasies that I never played for all those years are coming to Switch. So I'm like, hey, I can play all those games I never thought I would play from 20 years ago. So maybe at some point I'll actually play the Spider-Man game. It's hard for me to say what was in the game and what's in this comic and how much of new content there is here.
Because I've played a lot of Spider-Man games going back to some pretty low res, blocky looking. You had to tell someone it was Spider-Man or they wouldn't know it was Spider-Man game. So I'm always a sucker for it. But tell me about this comic book, because when you're done, I have a different Spider-Man comic.
Oh, well, this is funny, because this game's, needless to say, really well received, but I remember seeing, like, the initial stuff and being like train wreck, because I'm like you have essence Spider-Man stuff, but a lot of the stuff looks like stuff that wouldn't work. Or designs that are like, oh, we gotta tech up this guy and redesign him and add all these straps and pouches and, you know, real world stuff that I'm like, how many times does that actually work?
But you have to know, in modern video games, maybe you don't play a lot, a big element is they're going to have a ton of different skins. Like, that's a huge, I guess it's fairly easy to do, and there aren't hardly any games where that's not going to be a bonus or an addition. I think there were like 30 different outfits you could unlock.
But could you put a different skin on the Shocker so that he actually looks like the Shocker?
No. The villains, although in some games, I just finished Uncharted, and they have some of the villains. You can switch some of their outfits around, I believe. So you can, but Spider-Man had a lot of ridiculous outfits. So my favorite was the cartoon version from, you know, reminiscent of the 60s cartoon. So they would have that hyper-realistic video game character. You'd be interacting with Mary Jane, and you'd be the cartoony Spider-Man. And, you know, you'd be grabbing her up or something, and she would be in that more very realistic rendered style. That made me laugh. But anyways, I'm sure the... Yeah. Well, also, you don't like the Kingpin or Mr. Negative or the Vulture. So it features a lot of characters you're not interested in.
Well, it's pretty funny that, like, the cartoon and I guess the game has so much slot or brain trust, like, era influence, which is awesome because that's a good era to base something on. But, yeah, like, that's obviously what drew me to it. Not playing the game, so I'm like, that's fine. Like, I'll just read the comic, which is weird. That's a weird reversal. And also, because it was Dennis Hopeless as the writer. So I'm like, I like his books. So I'm like, I'm going to try this out. Oh, and the artist is Michele Bandini. So from what I gather, Norman Osborn is the mayor of New York during this time. And
yes,
the Kingpin is... on the downward slide to set up the chaos that comes to the city, because that's all in here.
To give you a quick synopsis of the game, it starts with you. Spider-Man has a somewhat friendly relationship with the police. He has a police contact.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man, to start the game, puts the Kingpin in jail. That creates other gangs filling in the gaps and other villains coming to the forefront who all have a beef with Norman Osborn, the mayor. And they leave plenty of Easter eggs for a Spider-Man game number two involving Harry Osborn.
Hmm. So
I don't know if they're going to explore that in a comic or not, but that's where that's at.
That's a pretty good synopsis of this issue. And there's also a text page at the end that says there'll be like additional things or like more new stories coming. So I assume the first issue is probably the closest to the game. And then it's going to start getting... like more and more just background or different stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I think I liked the game, but because I was playing it, but that version of Spider-Man was fine, but it wasn't. And that one, Mary Jane knows a secret. They've been together, but they were apart at the time the game starts. And then over the course of the game, they're going to maybe give it another try. And Miles gets introduced to that world, too.
Yeah, Miles is in here, too, for, like, I don't know, a page or two. So
and
he
gets his powers, and, spoiler, and he and Peter learn each other's secrets.
I mean, Doc Ock is in here, too, but not as the Doc Ock, you know.
Right, he's Peter's mentor in the game. And so, as a result... when his arc reaches its conclusion, it's a particular betrayal. It feels particularly strong because he's the role model and he works for him and they're two against the world. And then Doc Ock goes south and it hurts. And then everyone knows, like the movies and the TV show, the one element I didn't like was it seems like everybody knows his secret identity.
Oh, geez.
And I always hate that. I mean, it gets revealed throughout the course of the game that you're like, oh, now they know. And now and you're like, I don't understand. You have no problem with the idea that a guy gets bit by a radioactive spider instead of getting poisoned to get superpowers. But the idea that he has like a dual identity is so impossible to get around, even though we find out today, like all these people that have dual identities. So it's yet I haven't seen a single one where someone got bit by exposed to radiation and develop superpowers. But people have all kinds of double lives, we find out.
So I think this was cool, anyways. So I'll continue reading it. And then there is an element of, like, stuff I've already read before, because they have, like, Feast and Mr. Negative and, like, Dragon's Breath and all this stuff, and I'm like... But still, it's, like, interesting enough, and like sort of like an Ultimate Spider-Man thing.
Like yeah, I would say.
I would say even the artwork is sort of like in that direction too. So it was a fun time.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like if you didn't play the game, this gives you a lot of those beats.
Yeah.
I was curious about this whole Spider-Man life story, where they're going to kind of run him through a real progression starting in the 60s. So it's Chip Zdarsky, Mark Bagley, John Dell, and Frank Deramata.
I read this.
And I gotta say, I thought Bagley and Dell and Deramata did great. I like Bagley to begin with, but I thought this was some of the sharpest stuff. I mean, I kept checking back. I'm like, wow. I mean, I like Bagley, but this is... it really feels like he put his heart and soul into this in a way that...
Maybe he wasn't doing two issues in a month then.
Bagley can draw Spider-Man.
Yeah, it feels like he really had a lot of the... Also, just the faces I thought were really expressive and good. Just all in all, like I said, always liked him, but impressed that maybe... I don't know if they started this early or something or what, but it's, you know, a classic Spider-Man in the 60s. This is going to be your Gwen Stacy era. Mary Jane's around, but he's romantically linked to her. He's taking photos. The subplot is kind of like Vietnam, you know, so Flash is off to Vietnam and Peter and Flash have that contentious relationship.
You know, well, it's a 30-page story, which is cool. 30 pages of story. Like you said, it's college age, so Gwen and Peter are lab partners in Miles Warren, Professor Warren, the Jackal's chemistry class there. And it's Flash Thompson trying to decide, you know, about enlisting and going to Vietnam. Spidey's even wondering if he should be going, like, right? He, like Captain America did in World War II. Maybe it's my duty to go over there.
To head off to Vietnam. Yeah, I hadn't thought about Spider-Man from a perspective of what he thought about the Vietnam War. So for me, it was, while a familiar setting, a story that I don't remember reading about Spider-Man thinking about the war, other than, like you say, Flash coming back as the war vet, and he had that girlfriend for the longest time. I apologize, I can't remember her name. And then he develops, like, doesn't he have his drinking problem then and everything? And, I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but, you know, that whole she or something like that. Hello? Am I just crazy?
No, it's... I remember.
I just hadn't even thought about that Peter would have been considering that, or it must have come up. I mean, everyone had draft numbers and everything, so, and it was certainly an issue at the time. So for me, it was a new type of story with all the trappings of, like, Green Goblin and all that stuff.
Well, that's
sprinkled
nice
around it
with the 30 pages, right? There's room to even do that whole bit with Norman slipping in and out of the Goblin consciousness and alternatively remembering and forgetting that Peter is Spider-Man along with it.
And I also enjoyed his, like, Captain America, Bagley and Dells, because he's more muscular than Spider-Man, but not like Rob Liefeld out, you know what I mean? So I always like when there's this variety of superhero body types.
Yeah, so like...
And I feel like sometimes they make Cap really crazy buffed out, you know what I mean?
But Bagley usually has the big heads, so that usually takes away from that. You know what I mean? Proportionally, his bodies end up looking a little smaller because his heads are a little big, just stylistically. But with Spidey crossing paths with Cap, and then he, again, with a 30-page story, you got time to do both things, the Vietnam wrestling thing and the usual... punch out the Green Goblin problems. But he asked Cap, why aren't you going to Vietnam like you did in World War II, you know? And he's like, oh, man, another war, and I don't even know if I want to put my brand behind this war, that kind of thing. But in explaining, he kind of absolves Spidey of his guilt. But then, you know, the issue, presumably not to be directly continued, because we're going decade to decade.
Yeah, we're jumping. I think the next one is it a whole decade or just a few years?
Maybe 70s, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, this issue ends with, like, them going to Vietnam you know, the camera pans to Vietnam to a village there, and there's a helter-skelter looking cap, like outfitted in jungle camo and everything, who's like protecting a Vietnamese village. And I'm wondering, is this the 50s cap? Like, did Brubaker establish that the 50s cap went to Vietnam and hid out there after he was presumed dead when he fought Cap and everything?
Oh, good point. I hadn't thought of that. Because I wasn't sure who it was. You know, obviously he's wearing the Cap gear, but you're right, that's probably got to be the 50s cap.
But it wasn't really said, and it's likely not going to be followed up on, right, as we go into the 70s, or...
I thought it would be followed up in that, obviously, something's... Whether they choose to have the same stuff happen to Flash, Flash is going to be impacted by his experience, no doubt. So I wonder if that's where it comes back, and they have some thread that's impacting him when he shows up. Because it is weird, because they're going to have to pick and choose... That's why issue two, you're right, is going to be interesting, because do they just jump past his romance follies as well? Because, you know, obviously a lot's going to happen with Gwen and Mary Jane and, heck, even Betty. But I think by this point he had pretty much done with dating her. But...
And I didn't, yeah. That whole Mrs. Robinson thing. But I didn't. Pay attention enough to the solicits to see if it was supposed to be a actual limited series that was supposed to be a continuing story, or just basically like 4 one-shots, one for each decade.
Oh, I didn't either. I was just like, oh, this looks good. Let me read it. Was impressed that everybody brought the heat. Thought it was an interesting... Like I said, as long as they pick current events that I never thought about. Like, I wonder if they're going to do 70s, like Peter thinking about Nixon resigning or something like that or whatever. But just elements that I don't remember a lot of stories on and how the character would have reacted. It's a new way to filter some of that old material that I find interesting anyways. But like you say, the second one, I'll be interested if it's a continuation or just another slice of life.
Kevin, did you read Meet the Squirrels?
I did.
So did I.
Two issues out so far, Robbie Thompson and Nico Henriken.
This was one of those things where I didn't pre-order, and then as the time got closer to when the issues were coming out and I saw the covers, and I'm like, I think I made a mistake. So then I bought it off the shelves.
Have you ever seen The Americans, that television program with the KGB, like, infiltrating our culture in America, setting up as a family amongst us?
Yes, probably one of the best shows of the last 10 years.
So this is totally that.
But is it too much Americans? That's what I was trying to figure out.
It is. For me, it is. I mean, you're dealing with Skrulls covertly hiding out after the secret invasion. You know, we know Jessica Jones the first Jessica Jones, Jessica Drew, she was hunting down, loose Skrulls in our society after the secret invasion event, and they are still amongst us, and some are just hiding out, trying to assimilate, and with that being an aspect of the Captain Marvel feature film that is currently out and doing gangbusters, I'm not surprised to see Marvel going there. But like you said, it's a little too derivative here.
It also reminds me of the Vision comic book series, because it's a family, and they have issues and everything. It's like those two things mashed together.
Yeah, they're trying a little too hard, I think. Because I like this creative team.
Yeah.
I just don't like... So you've got Skrulls as a family in America. They're dealing with covert Skrull operations and activities while also wondering if they're... You know, like, brooding teen had a good day at school, you know? It's like, I don't know.
I mean, I'm enjoying it. And another thing to push me over, not just the covers, but I really enjoy the art, too, so... Yeah,
but it's like, I've heard this one before.
Yeah, you know I mean? It, like number two ends on a cliffhanger, so I'm gonna see where it goes. Like it could just escalate and be really awesome,
is Viv Vision gonna get killed? I mean, come on, you know.
Viv Vision.
It's like taking a story beat from the Vision book, just like you said. Sorry, go ahead, Andrew.
What I'm interested in is what is their overall objective? Like, how is this? Are they? Because obviously, if they're a cell, then they have a bigger picture that they're working towards. And it seems, I think there's potential for having an interesting reveal, because it seems ridiculous that the Skrulls would be still working the Earth angle, considering how bad it's gone every single time.
Well, I think there's
going to be some big story about some connection for why this is, because I just feel like, man, the Skrulls, pick a different planet, dude. It hasn't worked out well. You know, I can't think of too many victories you guys have pulled on this one. And, you know, being a intergalactic thing, they can, you know, are we led to believe there are sleeper cells on all planets? I don't know. I just thought that part gave me more interest. And as Kevin said, with two, and they have the big G flashback, I love the footage of, like, people shooting blasters at Galactus.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to do anything.
Yeah.
It's that whole refugee angle of it, though, that I think they're playing up. I think politically, the arts and media part of our culture is pushing a lot of sympathy for, like, refugees and that kind of thing. And they were also portrayed similarly in the movie. So here's a little of what you saw in the movie, and not everybody has seen The Americans, so some people might be like, This is brilliant!
But I'm very curious. Like I said, if there's some, I believe they could lay a seed for, like, what's the end game? Like, are they going to try another secret invasion? Like, why Earth? Out of all the planets to choose, this seems like the worst one, given their track record.
Well, the Earth's always been important, so even though it's really been a backwater world between, like, Skrull and Kree.
Technological backwater, and yet they've been involved with both the Empires, or at least tangentially involved with both the Empires, taking massive hits.
Yeah. But do you remember when they saved the universe, and, like, there was going to be a day for Earth during the Hickman Avengers run with Infinity?
No, I did not.
But the Earth saved the universe again, and they're just like, yeah, okay, we'll give you that one.
Because the other thing I thought would be neat is, if out of this, I would not mind seeing a Skrull superhero, which I don't, you know, like we had Captain Marvel. We've had some Kree-based, and obviously we have Skrull-based bad guys, the Super Skrull and Paybok and all that. But I thought, oh, maybe this will be the launch. One of these characters will decide, you know what, I'm putting on the long underwear, and I'm going to be a Skrull-based superhero.
Well, there's been some interesting Skrull things, like the Annihilation Skrull series. That was some good stuff. And then I remember the infiltration in Avengers Initiative, and then it ends this horribly where it's just like, oh, it's just another Skrull. Like, who cares? And I'm like, but that guy, he was a hero, and...
And so, Elijah Laserfist was good for a little while over in the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
But way back when, Bob Layton in the Cosmic Hercules miniseries had Skippy, his, like, Skrull, like, pal, sidekick.
Yeah, I'd love to see an Earth-based superhero who's a Skrull.
But everyone hates Skrulls, stinking Skrulls. I mean, I can't even say their name without saying that. So
yeah, but
it's hard to trust the Skrull.
You got to hide out, and you don't exactly want to go too public, but I guess a Skrull doesn't have to, because they can shapeshift, right?
But we all hated the Kree as well, and yet that didn't stop Captain Marvel. That's what I mean. You have a guy who's like, hey, I'm the good Skrull. I'm going to go beat up muggers and stuff like Spider-Man. than using his shape-shifting powers in clever ways. I don't know. I just thought this could be a way to launch out a Earth-based superhero Skrull. Oof. And that would be something new. And it's not like you're giving away a great idea that you would take to Image, because it's all contingent upon the Marvel Universe. So make a Skrull, but he can be the Captain Marvel for the Skrulls.
That'd be cool.
You could join the Champions along with Viv Vision.
Wow.
Free ideas I'm handing out here, Marvel. Free ideas.
You know that, and now like they can't legally use that idea.
No, but I said it was free.
You just ensured it'll never happen.
Yeah, because exactly. Now...
Keep Thanks, talking, Andrew. I wanted to read that, and now I can't.
Keep talking, but buddy.
I can't, because if I go to sue them, they'll play this podcast where I gave up all my rights to it. So how could I... By the very act of advertising it and saying it's being given away, I am ceding any rights I had in it. So I would not want to I would not hire Take Me On as a client if I'm like... Well, sure, I said I'd give it to him for free, but, you know. Free?
Any other books?
I
have a brief book.
Oh, go ahead, Kevin.
Books.
Are you reading the Conan book, Steve?
No, I'm not caught up.
Oh.
Should I be?
I don't know. Are you excited for Age of Conan Belit?
Sure. Why not?
I passed on that one.
Really?
After I made... I'm like, they're going to milk every goddamn corner of the Conan universe with... Next, we're going to have the book of the what are some other minor characters? The Picts.
Minor?
It's going to be Picktails, like... Bran MacMorn and all his tribesmen each get a 6-issue limited series.
Oh, wow, down on Conan. No, I would say she's like one of the major characters from my limited Conan knowledge. Back me up, Steve. Is she a major character or not?
Yes, and I wasn't too happy with... That's when I thought the Conan books over at Dark Horse started faltering.
I think
they did a good job when they got to that time period of Conan.
See, I thought there was real faltering when they had the Roy Thomas. Like, what was it? I don't even remember what the story was called again. But like, there was that weird period, and I was like, this is all right. And then it's like, I've already seen all this before.
My favorite era of Conan is issues 50 to 100. It's that whole... you know, John Buscema with Ernie Chan inks, and it's the Belit stuff.
Wonder how you'll react to this. You'll probably have a different reaction than I have a reaction, so.
It was a great supporting cast.
Because I guess this is her as maybe a teenager or a little younger. So it's not like...
She hasn't fooled the pirates into thinking she's a goddess yet.
There's some fooling, some trickery going on and stuff like that. This is by Tini Howard, and I don't know. Andrew, you know the artist that worked on Maneaters and Mockingbird?
Oh, no, I remember those books. I do not remember the artist's name. I do remember, because I only read Maneaters 1, and you continued on with it.
Yeah, there is no weird signs or anything in this issue.
Are you sure? You say that now, but I'm going to open it up, and there'll be like a whole panel of a sidewalk store, and all the, like, Jim the Blacksmith will have a big PDF Photoshop sign in it.
Well, there's no signs on the stores. They're because, you know, it's a Hyborian age. So
like
that
I said,
kind
Jim
of eliminates a lot of the...
Sally the Alchemist. There are some vendors there.
Sally the Alchemist. Well, and there's no weird, like, news reporters or anything like that either.
Posters on her wall.
Belit does not have posters on her wall of My Chemical Romance or or whatever, or the Smiths. What is that what you would listen to? Or am I just crazy? I assume that's what the music she'd be into. Oh, and this is another interesting question. It says there's a part one of a new novella in here. And, like, yeah, there is, like, a text piece for, like, a story, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to read that.
Oh, that's just so that then when they ship them, they can charge magazine rates.
Yeah, exactly, right?
A Stan Lee Captain America text piece.
Right.
I can't believe the Marvel Masterworks, like, reprinted those text pages and those stories and everything. I'm like, that's great, but I never read one.
Yeah, and then they jacked up the Masterworks from $60 to $75 for those ones.
Did they? Yeah, those old-timey
text pieces. Oh, yeah, because, yeah, I think there's more work to be done on those, too. Yeah, because
of the text pieces.
Yeah, those things are dreary reading from in my limited perspective. I don't know that I've ever made it through one. Really? Those weird two-page capstone?
Okay, Fin Fang Foom comes in, he picks up the Great Wall of China and starts swinging around as a baseball bat. No enjoyment, Andrew?
I'm not reading that in text. If you give me a comic version of that, sure. I don't want to read a story about it, no.
I never read the text stories.
Yeah, that's what I just said. The text stories
are garbage. I thought you were referring to the monster stories because it's the same story over and over again.
No, I was referring to the text pieces.
Okay, my mistake.
I've got a quick one to say. I continued with Marvel Comics Presents, but I also picked up a new book. I decided I would jump back on Miss Marvel Rebooted with Saladin Ahmed and Mingyu Zheng and Juan Velasco.
See, I picked that up at the Beguiling. I know, so counter to what you're supposed to be buying there. And I was going to read it for the show, and then I didn't.
Well, I won't spoil it, but I will say there's a fun new villain, Deathbringer, that I'm unfamiliar with that looks like a great kind of Casey Jones-esque from TMNT type of character with hockey equipment and pads with spikes and a sword and all that. What I wanted to say is I had forgotten how much I like the comic book idea of Miss Marvel. I feel like in this creative hands, she's bringing back, and I'm sure she always had this, but I'd forgotten the joy of, like, she takes more from Plastic Man in a way than Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, her fist will have, like, a textured kind of wrecking ball type of look. And I also enjoy that it's always a distorted figure.
Yeah.
Like, her legs are always in some weird position and different body parts are unnaturally large or whatever. So it's really just fun. In this era of we want our comics to look like the movies, I really enjoy when they have comics that look like comics and take advantage of bizarre physics that only exist in comics. Plus, this one is like wall-to-wall action. There's like four different fights in it and everything. So while they lay the groundwork for her current situation and she's in school and who knows her secret identity and who doesn't, and that's all well and good, and hopefully that'll play out. I really like that it was action-packed and they have her recap her origin in a single page. Unlike, I remember I was recently reviewing something where, the Miles Morales Spider-Man, where his recap, I felt like, went on for like 5 or 6 pages. This is the way to do it. It's a popular character. Everyone, for the most part, knows. So don't beat it into the ground. Like, you can cover this very quickly, and if someone's really interested, they'll go back and look. But, yeah, so far, impressed with it. I like it. Like I said, art team's great. Love that freakish, weird-looking character. And I like having those stretchy characters back, doing weird, impossible stretches. I feel like Mr. Fantastic is his own thing, and she's her own thing, and how they approach stretchy powers.
Yeah, she's always been fun in guest appearances. I remember the whole Miles. It must have been Miles, right? It was Spider-Gwen and her, and probably Miles.
Right, and I'm still reading Champions. She and he are prominently featured in the Champions title.
Yeah.
Which I also am still continuing on. But yeah, just wanted to say, I'm not a big Ms. Marvel expert, obviously, so I don't know if tonally it will meet with people's approval. But I thought it was fun. Like I said, having that much action in a first issue, I completely agree with. I feel like it's a comic book. It's a superhero comic book. Colors, action, impossible physics. All these things are very cool.
She is Spidey's guest in the first issue of the new Marvel team-up relaunch, too.
Yeah.
Yes, if I see that, I will probably be purchasing that as well, but who knows with the comic book stores.
Yeah, I purchased it. You know, it'd be a funny, do you remember, we covered the first Ms. Marvel number one when it originally came out years ago, and I think I was sort of like so-so on it. And, like, fast forward, now it's, like, a big book.
Nice. Was that her first appearance?
No, but it was her first ongoing series and her, like, number one. Like, I think she had appeared briefly in the Captain Marvel series.
Okay.
And well, then she got her own book.
You crazy hustlers. I know it's only first appearances. I know you're trying to sell me on, oh, it's their third partial appearance. But the first time they use the word hello. So that means it's worth more than the next one.
But that, like, that number one went to, like, seven printings, and now I, like, wish I had, like 20 copies of that, like, number one.
I know you just want one from each printing.
I know. We'll go for the seventh print, Andrew.
And I picked
The True Believer is probably maybe the eighth. I'm not sure if you count that.
And I don't. And I picked up the Marvel Rising book.
I didn't pick one up.
Berto De Salva, Rachel Rosenberg. It's like more younger based, but I like the quick pacing in it, and I like the artwork. I don't think I'm going to continue with it because I just feel like it might be getting more towards the cartoon level of engagement, which isn't really my, as you guys know, I'm kind of haven't been as into the cartoons and Marvel animation for the last 5 or so years. And I think that's just me. I think I've just watched a lot of cartoons and I just need a 10 or 15 years break and then I'll be back into them.
I still say that Spider-Man 1 is the exception to the rule.
Has there been
Guardians isn't still going?
It's still going, but it should you make time for it? No.
Yeah, I quit. Like I said, I've pulled the plug on them. They're not bad or anything. I just felt it like it's stuff I'd all seen before. And it's cool that now they sometimes steal from the comics, but it's never a better version in my humble opinion, so I'm fine letting them go.
There it is. It's gone.
Apparently. He just doesn't like that Spider-Man.
Hey, I'm all ready for Millie the Model to come back.
Did you see the Captain Marvel movie? The aforementioned Captain Marvel movie?
Yes.
I think weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw it when we were... as loyal listeners know, if they listen to our Operation Galactic Storm, it's about when I saw it. And it was so fun to see Atlas and Minerva reference in the movie. It made me very excited.
Right, that's pretty funny. I mean, I assume you guys enjoyed it. Everyone seems like they've enjoyed it, right?
I really
like
it.
There's people of various levels of enjoyment out there.
Well, your people.
No, I just mean, every movie there's always, the backlash people, and then the people are like, this is the greatest movie ever. And I was like, neither of those people. Like, it's not a great movie, but it's a good movie.
Yeah, that's what I said. Did you enjoy it? That's all. I mean, if you get more nitpicky, the first half of it, I thought, unless you really knew... had an idea what you were getting to because you knew the character from the comics, the first half of it was really confusing.
Like, yes, I think that beginning until she gets to Earth, I feel like it was a lot to throw at people. But I would much rather have the movie end strong and start weak than the other way around as a personal preference. It's always better for me to end strong. Throw a lot of stuff at me, that's fine. It's okay. But then it started picking up. And I thought the effects were fine. Like, I was a little nervous about de-aged Nick Fury.
Yeah.
But it didn't really bother me. But I'm not a huge snob about that stuff, I find. But then sometimes things, like I've always said, I didn't think the effects in Black Panther were that good. So it's not like at times I don't get critical, but I was like, yeah, the Phil Coulson was a little bit weirder at times. I think they spent more money on Sam Jackson. But I was impressed. I mean, that's the whole film. They got to do that. That couldn't have been cheap.
I loved seeing some of the old Kree designs, you know.
And I really like
one Kree design you don't see that I hope they're saving for another movie.
A Sentry?
No, the Supreme Intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that we saw one of the other Captain Marvels as a kid. Monica Rambeau. Yeah. I was all excited for that. Like, bring on Captain, bring on the other Captain Marvel.
Well, that movie took place, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, so she would be of age now.
Yeah, I was hoping. I'm like, that'd be great. I always love that character. The other thing, to contrast it with another movie that got a lot of heat, I felt like they did a lot of good stuff visually. For instance, I don't know if you guys ever saw the first of the Christopher Nolan Batman movies.
Yeah.
Some of the greatest superhero movies ever?
But they have a whole bit about, like, the butler's like, oh, why do we fall down to get up?
And oh, yeah.
A lot of dialogue about it. And I like that in this movie, they use a visual-only montage for the same point.
Well, that's like and the Captain America origin, too.
Yeah, I'd much rather have that just done visually than have the butler tell me the lesson I'm supposed to learn.
With no doubt playing.
So, as far as I'm concerned, visuals beat butler telling me what to think. Not that I can't relate. Obviously, my butler told me many important lessons. I don't want to doubt. Thank you, Jeeves, for your years of hard service. I don't want him to be offended when he listens. But
and your chauffeur Bascom.
Yeah, but sometimes I like that. I was like, oh, it's the same point, but instead of having a lot of belabored dialogue, we'll just see it on a screen. Like, that's cool. I like to see things in movies.
Well, that's my trip. Like, it doesn't take much for me to enjoy one of these movies. I just want to see some of the cool stuff that I've enjoyed in comic book form. Something like that done up on the screen, you know? Thor throwing the hammer and it going through a whole bunch of storm giants and then coming back to his hand. Ghost Rider riding up the side of a building and leaving a flaming trail, you know?
But then we get those Fantastic Four movies, Steve.
But I still got to see the Human Torch and great movies. I still got to see the Human Torch and Silver Surfer flying around. That was pretty cool. That was all I needed.
You got to see Galactus.
Oh,
Steve.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
But
yeah, I got to see a cloud. Thanks.
So in this movie, it was really cool to finally see like a alpha level cosmic character being cosmic. Right, she's flying around with the Phoenix Force all around her, and she's flying through ships, and nothing can stop her. And boom, boom! My father and my teenage son, who I brought to the movie, and actually another dad of one of my kids' friends who also went, they all hadn't seen anything like that before, and having not read too many comics, not really experienced that. They all thought that was like she was so overpowered. They're like, we were so confused in the first half, and she was so overpowered in the second half. But to me, it was cool to see a fiery being flying around, a humanoid being flying around in outer space, damaging a whole armada of starships. That's cool. That's fun. That's comic book fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought it was also clever that they didn't give the name of her lieutenant, because then we would have known he was a bad guy. The name comes out at the end, and I'm like, oh, that creep. Because, you know, like, he's the creep from the first Captain Marvel. But they, I don't ever remember them saying his name, Yogg whatever. You know, the original heel that did in the first Captain Marvel.
It's funny how things get around to the same thing, just, like, a different way.
Yeah, so I thought that was clever, holding that name back, but distinctly dropping Atlas and Minerva. So you get that little cheap thrill, and you're like, ooh, I know who they are. And any of those fish-out-of-water stories, like, the jokes are simple. Like, they did them in Thor, too. But they work. You know, anytime you have someone in an environment, we know that they don't. You can mine cheap humor out of it.
But there's a cat, Andrew.
Yeah, I thought the cat was... I don't get all the madness for the cat. Like, first of all, the cat is the one that maimed Nick Fury, which seems kind of underplayed. Like, that's a big point.
I might be... my opinion might be suspect, as people know when they listen to Indie Comic Book Noise. I bring up cats a lot.
Yes, you're the... You're the cat man.
Yeah, I mean, other than a couple of times, I mean, I like the whole women empowerment, women can be strong. You know, it was Marvel's opportunity to try to do their Wonder Woman, little girl empowerment type story, which was cool. But I don't know, some of the scenes kind of hit me over the head a little too hard of, like, her being mommy-ish to Nick Fury. And those were like, it's like, oh, I guess we're going with the... You know, the four Millie the Models, the four lives of Millie the Model. And we're going to reflect Captain Marvel through each of those lenses.
I thought it was weird that they chose to make it... She has a much more pivotal role in his life, I think, than I would have thought. Because it seems like at the time, he's almost kind of on his way out and just sort of going through the motions. And I thought it was a lot of his story, too, because this... I take it to be that this really revitalized and re-energized Nick. Hmm. And I guess it's easier for me to disassociate this Nick Fury from the comic book Nick Fury, because I'm not a big Ultimate Universe guy.
Right.
So it's an easier jump to be like, well, this isn't the man on the wall, so I shouldn't be expecting those stories of him as some kind of bugged out watcher guy.
I like how you totally ignored Nick Fury Jr.
Yeah, well, rightfully so.
Yeah, well, you know, he wasn't really my Nick Fury either, so I don't, I have less of a time. Like, it's one thing if it's a character that you've followed more closely. Like, I can see those people that were ultimate Marvel fans, and that's their universe. I don't know how they would feel about this Nick Fury. If they're like, oh man, this isn't the Nick Fury they've established. Like, he's way more badass 24/7. But I thought it was fine to show, like, this was a spark that got him back into being the kind, giving him this drive and purpose and renewed vigor. I was fine with it. But like I said, I'm not, I've read some of the Ultimate, but I don't have any kind of jam with it.
The timing is neat where it's that movie, and then quite literally a month or 6 weeks later, we're getting the second Avengers Thanos Infinity Gauntlet movie, so...
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to wrap it all up in only a 14-hour running time. I mean...
It's like, are they going to have to pull Captain Marvel from the theaters to make room for the... Or is they both going to be in the theaters for the same... For a little while for the same time? It's funny.
All I know is I... Last year, when I went to see Black Panther, like, a week before the Avengers movie came out...
I mean, I'm just going to need to stop drinking liquids now, I think, so I
can
sit through that movie. It's running time is, I think, already like 3 hours or over 3 hours.
Andrew, so I got like an app for you. I got an app that tells you.
Oh, the Run Pee app?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tells you when to go pee. I did it during Captain Marvel, and it was awesome. It gave me like a 4-minute countdown. I went, peed, came back. Perfect.
Is there any intermission?
I usually go see these movies opening day, but because we'll be in the air and traveling and stuff. I'm probably not going to see it till the second weekend.
You know, it's funny that I'm going to be doing a con type of thing. So it's like not possible for me to get to the movie theater at my earliest convenience.
I already got my tickets for Sunday, so if you boys want me to spoil it for you, let me know.
The next episode of Marvel Noise might be Andrew's solo review of... No, just kidding. We'll have seen it by then. And I hope that you guys all do, too. I think that's a good place to wrap up this episode so we can start packing our suitcases. I hope you all are enjoying the spring that has sprung and that you're getting outside and starting to move around a little bit more. It's always nice to enjoy the spring weather, but don't forget to pick a nice tree to sit under to read some comics.
Immortal Hulk, still awesome.
That's for sure. I haven't read X-Men books in a long time because of this.
Oh, we should have talked about that.
What?
Hickman's coming back to Marvel and he's doing some X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
He's coming to save the X-Men.
Well, it's so funny because, all right, here's a tangent before we break this episode up. The X-Men are doing another event that seems like it is reflective of, but more of an homage of, rather than a direct sequel to or copy of the old Age of Apocalypse storyline, where, if you're not familiar, in the mid-90s, they did a thing where a big event happened and it drove our reality into an apocalypse supreme reality, and all of the X-Men books stopped being published for a few months and their titles all changed and the characters all changed and their histories all changed. And as it was a very cleverly run event, I thought it was really neat the way they did it, but I'm really not a fan of those big long-running alternate reality type stories.
I guess it's not. Age of Utopia this time?
Yeah, or Age of X-Man or whatever. It all relates to that stuff. And so they're doing that again. But on the flip side, you've got the Uncanny X-Men title, which is sort of a little bit removed from those events in that, I guess it was Uncanny X-Men Annual 2, we got the story of how Cyclops has been revived by, I guess, young Cable stuck a little hunk of the Phoenix Force in Scott Summers' corpse, and when he died by the Phoenix and Jean, he didn't really die. So, yay, he's alive. So who's the other guy who Scott has missed the boat on being part of this X-Men adventure with the alternate reality and everything like that, because he's been dead and been revived. And the other character who's in the same boat is Wolverine. He's been dead and he's just been revived, although you wouldn't know it because that Return of Wolverine miniseries, even though the art was nice, just seemed like a big flop in my mind. And Wolverine is back, and they're like two X-Men without any X-team, so the two of them in the Uncanny X-Men book have been kind of getting their own team together. It's like Danny Moonstar and Multiple Man and other folks who are also not involved in the X-Event. So they've got that brewing, and it's like, well, that's at least marginally interesting to me. And then to hear that Hickman's coming soon, it's like, oh, good, I don't have to get into any of this. I'll just wait for all of this to blow over and the new status quo to take shape. And it looks like next year I'll be reading some X-Men books, or this summer, or whenever the heck it is.
This summer.
Coming to you this summer.
I know.
Yeah, I tried to jump into some of that, but I just got washed out with the volume of the commitment required. It's just, there were so many books and so much, and it just, instead of invigorating me, it washed. So I'd grabbed a few here or there, but I'm like, you know, to get into this is such a commitment of issues that I can't run all this stuff down. I think they would have been better having a more measured, or splitting it up into something more clearly dividable or whatever, because they're asking people for a lot of books.
And And I get editorially and creatively, it's like, oh, well, we can do a thing where, like, Nightcrawler's really cool. And, well, why don't you put that into the real Nightcrawler character that you've ruined and make him into a cool character again, maybe? Maybe you should put your attention there. And it's like, well, we're breaking free of the continuity and exploring with a fresh start. And it's like, yeah, but these worlds, there's so much continuity in the worlds that isn't explained or gotten to that it's like, well, the continuity's there. It's just nobody knows it, which is doesn't do anyone any favors either. So I don't know. I'm for, like we've said before, well, I don't need a new Marvel Universe or an Ultimate Universe. The one that Stan and Jack and Steve created is plenty good enough for me.
Then don't read City at War, because it's a gamerverse, Steve. A gamerverse.
Well, until the City of War is right outside your door, make mine Marvel.
Or until the Hulk reforms on a guy. Oh, wait, no. That happened.
Ooh, on a guy?
Sounds but remember heavy. There was a guy, and then the Hulk reformed and, like, suffocated the guy as he reformed, and the guy was inside? Anyways.
It was like a Zemo Doughboy guy.
Yeah, it was weird.
All right, gang. Later.
In the dark, I can see his face. In the dark, I can reach him. He hides like a child. He hides like a child. Keeps his finger on the trigger. You know he can't stand the day. Shoot out the lights. Shoot out the light. Keep the blind down on the window. Keep the pain on the inside. Just a watch in the dark. Just a watch in the dark. He might laugh, you won't see him as he thunders through the night. Shoot out the lights. Shoot out the lights. The shadows move. In the darkness, the game is real. Realize you're gone. Realize you're gone. See, watches the lights of the city when he moves through the night. The light. Shoot out the light.